Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman.
Ford is building a $2.5 billion plant in Mexico. It's not going to happen. I'm going to say, folks, we got to stop this.
I understood that these trade agreements were going to destroy the middle class of this country.
We're going to beat all of these countries that are taking so much of our money away from us on a daily basis.
Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are tapping into voter angst about the economy and specifically trade. For many years, Republicans and Democrats alike have championed the benefits of global trade, from NAFTA to the more recent Trans-Pacific Partnership. But many voters see these deals as creating winners and losers, and they are the losers, with their jobs being sent overseas or their wages being cut. With me now are Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine and Catherine Rempel with The Washington Post. And Catherine, it has been more than 20 years since NAFTA was signed. So how has it changed our economy?
You know, if you talk to economists, I think that they would say that it's helped grow our economy. It's helped improve the growth and incomes of our neighbors as well. That doesn't mean that there aren't winners and losers. You know, in aggregate terms, on net, there have been benefits, but there have been some losses, and they're highly concentrated and painful losses, and there are workers who have not recovered from that.
You know, I think that in some ways the manufacturing conversation is a proxy for the conversation about globalization. And what we can say about that is while free trade and globalization have increased wealth and prosperity at a global level, they've also, some economists believe, increased inequality within countries, not just within the U.S., but within many countries. And so I think what that does is create the exact political dynamic that we're seeing right now, where you've got a growing wealth divide, you've got people that really feel that they have lost out in this game of globalization. And that's why you've got the populist politics at the moment.
So in a way, then, are Trump and Sanders right when they talk about the effects of trade and what it's been doing to a lot of people who are now voting for them?
You know, there are winners and losers. And the question is, where are the winners and losers? Who are the winners and losers? I think that you can see what's happened in Michigan is a perfect example of a Rust Belt state that never recovered post-2008, where a lot of losses in manufacturing jobs are concentrated. And that's why you have a Bernie Sanders message resonating there so much and a Trump message.
So if you have elections, Catherine, coming up next week in Ohio and Illinois, also in that Rust Belt, do these statements from Trump and Sanders, does it pull the rest of the party, does it pull the other candidates to these protectionist policies?
It certainly seems that way. And on the right as well. I mean, traditionally, Democrats have been more skeptical about trade because a key source of their constituency is, you know, like manufacturing workers, working class white people, the people who have been on the losing end of this to some extent. And Republicans have historically been more pro-trade, right? I mean, a lot of their constituents are the businesses themselves that see export opportunities that could be opened up as a result of more, you know, more open trade policies. What's strange about what's happened now is that you have the leading Republican candidate sort of going against party orthodoxy and saying, no, this is bad for us. And to be fair, I mean, this is not a new message that he's had. Donald Trump has been accused of flip-flopping on a lot of different policy positions. But if you look at comments that he had been making about previous trade deals with Japan, with China, with NAFTA, he's basically said that we've been dummies all along. This is not a new talking point for him.
I see why
well,
I need to jump in here.
just to fact-check Donald Trump, I mean, you know, much of what he says needs fact-checking. You know, when he talks about the Chinese waging a currency war against America, well, the renminbi is actually appreciated by 50% against the dollar since 2005.
Yeah, so if anything, you could argue that it's like undervalued, overvalued at this point.
But I think that what is happening actually is that the nature of trade is changing. So many kinds of trade flows, particularly in the sort of goods that we imagine getting traded, those are actually in some ways flattening out, but digital trade flows of information are increasing. The problem is that the companies that create those things, the social media companies, the Googles, the Facebooks, they don't actually create as many jobs as GM and GE and all of those other big manufacturing companies used to. And that's true in the U.S. and that's true everywhere. You know, the Chinese are fretting about losing their jobs to other parts of Southeast Asia or to robots. So this is not just a U.S. problem.
Okay, so let's play a bit of a fantasy world here. What would happen if the U.S. did start pulling out of all these trade deals? How would that affect the U.S. economy?
I think it would be actually very bad for the economy.
Because?
Because we would risk having a trade war. You would have other countries retaliate. We've seen this again and again. We saw this in the 1930s, and we saw it in the 70s. We saw it actually under George W. Bush.
But so how does that play out? I mean, what does that look like for a consumer?
What that means is that our U.S. companies have fewer opportunities to send goods abroad, and goods and services for that matter abroad. And beyond that, U.S. consumers could potentially end up paying higher prices for the products that they buy. So again, you know, the economists say that there are mutual gains from trade. The gains are on both sides in these cases. And when you start curbing the availability of both imports and exports, consumers and workers on both sides of the table end up hurting.
So in the end, what does this all mean for that individual voter, the one that does feel the angst, that has seen their job go away? Where does that leave them?
Well, if you're one of these voters, I get why you're very skeptical of trade. I don't think that the policy solution that you should be seeking out is to shut down trade altogether. Globalization is a force. It is not stoppable. You know, it's not as if we can return to a previous period in time when these jobs were more plentiful and paid better. What you can do is try to shape the rules a little bit so that workers are somewhat more protected in terms of having an even playing field, things like that. You can try to have different types of programs that help transition workers whose jobs are being displaced. We've done historically a terrible job at that, whether that means retraining or even giving them greater income supports because they've been, you know, they suffered job loss as a result of trade. So if you are a worker who has been, you perceive that you have been hurt by trade, you should be seeking out candidates who have smart, well thought out policy options that address those kinds of solutions.
Catherine Rumpel with The Washington Post and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find more Money Talking online or by subscribing to our podcast. We've been teaming up with the Harvard Business Review, trying to find ways to survive, even thrive, in the workplace. For example, why do you keep saying yes to more meetings?
I think that they're like candy. So they're easy to accept, easy to go to, and so they're the path of least resistance.
You can find more at moneytalking.org or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm Charlie Herman. Thanks for listening.